This is a production of Cornell University.
Essay meeting, February 4th, 2010.
I have some complaints about this. It's missing green. Right.
Yeah, well, you gotta
ask. Do it. She's just not a good server.
Okay.
It is now 4:46. If the SA representatives will please take their seats, and if you can call it the roll out.
No, I'm just going to roll out. No, non-conforming.
Hey.
Well, the court's made public. Oh, okay.
Here. Here.
Here.
Do you have that?
Yep.
I mean,
here.
Here. Yep.
Excuse. Did they make one for that?
Here.
Should be late. Yeah.
Here. Excuse. Excuse. He'll be. Excuse. Excuse.
Yes.
Excuse.
Here.
Who?
Yeah.
Oh, he's excused.
And now we're going to move on to approval of the minutes from the last meeting. If anyone has any objections or motions to make, I'm going to
call for acclamation.
Second.
Is there any dissent? All right, the minutes have been approved. Now moving on to open microphone. If anyone from the audience wishes to address the assembly on an issue that is currently not on the agenda, please step forward. We can move on to announcements afterwards. So now announcements and reports. Parliamentary.
So if any of you are interested in taking part in the university's judicial system, you can currently go to studentjudicialcouncil.org, click on the link that says apply, and at the moment you can apply to the Greek Judicial Board. In future semesters you can apply to the peer review board and potentially other judicial boards as well. So this is that site if you are at all interested, and fill out an application.
We didn't do it. Okay, now I'd also like to welcome two new members of the SA. So two seats have been vacated this semester and now will be replaced in order of the highest ranking non-winning candidates from the spring 09 elections. So those two seats belong to Representatives Andrew Brockman and Scott Purdy. And now, if you would rise and repeat the oath of office. Yeah, raise your right hand. In view of the trust the Cornell community has vested in me. As well as my personal sense of honor. I, state your name.
I, Andrew Brockman.
Do solemnly affirm. To fulfill my responsibilities as a student's elected representative.
I will engage in open and honest debate.
In a process where I am guided by truth and fairness. I will never purposefully misrepresent the facts. In an effort to achieve my goals. If a conflict of interest arises, I will relinquish my right to participate in the decision-making process. I will seek out and voice effectively the interests and concerns of the student body. Address the issues of my fellow students. And strive to improve the quality of life at Cornell for all students. All right, thank you, and welcome to the office. Okay. Office hours for me this week will be on Saturday, 11 to 12 p.m. in Live Cafe. And I would like to commend the Cornell basketball team on achieving their national ranking in how many years was it? In 59 years, and wish them luck in their upcoming game against Yale this weekend. Now we have a trustee meeting update.
After students come to Cornell, and the question that you're looking to answer, you know, why it's going on, what can be done in terms of reorganization of various different offices, in terms of support between faculty and such on campus to address this problem, because it is actually a very significant problem. Some other things we have discussed with the school board, there are some new programs going on. There's now a joint MPS, Plant Breeding and Cal, and a Master of Technology, Biotech and Business Management from the Tamil Nadu Agriculture University in India. Additionally, we approved the new PhD JD program in Human Development and in Law, which should be introduced soon. And also, we approved the continuing steps for the new medical research building in New York City, which will be discussed further by the committee. In terms of what else we're doing, there, as you know, about strategic planning, we have reimagining for now. But additionally, we also have strategic planning going on by Professor Ed Waller, which I think something students are involved with as well. And at the same time, we are in the middle of a reaccreditation process, which Steele is involved with as well as myself for the upcoming year. So there are lots of things going on campus in terms of debate that students can be involved in the community. And I think it's really important to you as a student assembly and for all of us as undergraduates to really try to respect this out there. And I guess one other thing that we discussed in terms of this planning was the Student Enrollment Task Force by the Berkeley. And really, as a board, we just discussed the various opportunities for student income, but all the problems that will be associated with that income. So we understand those issues. But if there are any large questions, feel free to ask now or come see us outside.
Any questions? Okay, Steve Andrews.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I know that we invited Dean LaPage to come talk about like the theater cuts. Have the trustees discussed how different schools have been trimming down their budgets and what the trustees' vision is on this entirety?
So pretty much the way that the trustees are involved in this, sort of the broad level, they are involved in setting the goals and understanding where we need to accomplish in terms of the budget cuts to the 215 million, to the 90 million, which being strictly for procurement. Again, that's something else that in the newspaper article we have some discussions seem to get cues that they're not coming into anything involved in academics. But in terms of level, the way that we want to do this as a university is to ensure that the individuals closest to those departments are the ones who are making the decisions. So it's really coming from the college deans and their committees that they have set up and the reports that they have issued over the past several months, and not necessarily coming from up above the Stanford Provost's office. So the big one that we saw this week was, I guess, one of the first moves from the College of Arts and Sciences, although we do not know what coming next, they're going to be more than people start rolling out. But they're all in the end of the go to the assembly's office, place the constituents to go take a look at what's being discussed, and they'll have some general ideas for what may happen in the
months. VP, come on.
Yeah, is this on? No?
Yeah.
I mean, so I think the university has already committed itself to shared governance, and I think as we move forward in this reimagining Cornell process, we have to ensure that the university commits itself to shared sacrifice. So, you know, when a department's getting out of a $6 million cut, one department gets $2 million, it's certainly cause for concern. I know Natalie's been working hard with the other arts and sciences reps to make sure that Dean LaPage comes to the student assembly, just to hear constituent concerns. And I know ACE has been in contact, too. So, I think as you move forward, just keep in mind that this whole idea of shared sacrifice as we move forward.
Any other questions? Yeah, I have one. I remember you saying during the trustee meeting that the trustees were discussing disaster relief for the Haiti earthquake. Is there any talk of any university-wide fundraising initiatives or anything?
So basically, I know the Wild Canal Medical School is really analyzing what the exact on their end. There's been nothing that has yet been introduced, although it sounds as though the historian has committed the university to doing something, especially since so instead of right now, we're really focusing externally in terms of what we as student groups do and as individuals reaching out to the broader community. But there should be an announcement. President Scorsese promised to have an announcement about that Yeah.
Okay.
Something else which I forgot to mention, Mike and I also currently working on getting more students involved in terms of next month when the trustees come to campus. And so, as the fraternity sorority would like to say, hopefully the student assembly will be like a crush to one of the events.
Okay. Any other questions? All right. Thank you for stopping by.
I need to make a motion to move Resolution 44 up on the agenda for right now, considering Dr. Clark and Mrs. Grant are here.
Okay. Yeah, we'll go ahead and move it up there. So, do you want to move it up to business of the day? Is that
yeah.
Meaning it will be voted on?
No.
Okay. Yeah, so this will be just question and answers, so you can come up and... If everyone can introduce themselves.
Oh, yeah, sorry about that. My name is Ken Clark. I'm director of the Cornell National Business for the Mobile Community
Center. Hi, my name is Mary Beth Grant, and I work at the Judicial
Okay, so the two quick corrections is one, in the first where at the clause, the second, be in there for the call. Run for elected position to keep their elected positions if they are, you know,
basically a coming to realization that this is what Chi Alpha has good point of those convictions and gets them with a national organization expecting them. And Chris, on the other hand, who disagreed with that decision, acted in terms of raising the highlighting of this issue for the student community, raising the highlighting of this issue for him. So there's still a great deal of complexity associated with this, and that, of course, you know, such resolutions and such will be considered by the council. So I would encourage you, even as you make a step in an effort to address discrimination, go on to that
complexity. Before we move on to questions, I think, you know, the contents of this resolution is pretty straightforward. So, Representative Brockman, with your permission, if we can move it to business of the day so it can just be debated, and Dr. Clark and Mayor Beth Grant will have to come next week. Yeah. Okay. So, Vincent, and Representative. VPN.
Hi, my name is Vincent. So I guess I had a question on the enforcement of this. So what would be the process, so if we pass this and we have a situation perhaps like Chi Alpha, what would be the enforcement process? Who would be the one enforcing it? Would it be the EJA's office? Would it be the Office of Assemblies? Would it be the Student Assembly? And what would be the factual basis for analyzing, you know, the violation? Would the committee be formed? So just, you know, just if we could outline a process, or would that process be determined if the violation occurred?
Well, the process is through the Office of the Student, just as the Chi Alpha controversy was dealt with first through the SAFC, and then there's a whole order of success, and then the SA, and then the advisement, and that's usually how these processes are.
And so would the JA's office be at all involved in the enforcement of this, or no?
No.
Or?
No, the JA's office would only be involved in things that violate the code, and because this particular aspect is not in the code, it would be involved.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Representative Andrews.
So, if I'm reading this correctly, essentially, if the same thing that happened at Chi Alpha last year happened again, this would now cover exactly that and would be able to address it in the way that it should have been addressed, or would it not? Okay, so what is this exactly covered?
Pretty much, the reason why this is a neutral solution, why this is a good solution, is because it's not imposing values on an independent student organization. That was the main problem with the Chi Alpha controversy. We all voted on resolution, well, you're here last spring, and that it got quickly overturned because, in a lot of ways, that resolution we passed, not only was it somewhat malicious, but it was in violation of university principles. Now, what this does is distinguish between democratic organizations and non-democratic organizations. Chi Alpha chooses leadership from the outside clergy, from the whole application process, and everything that came back. The reason Chi Alpha is the first whereas clause is because that's how we got to where we are. But it will not impose values upon religious organizations. That's for sure.
Which line exactly does that? Because from the words of the right to be free from discrimination, part of membership includes, it is not limited to the right to vote or run elected positions within the IO. That's referring to, that's the distinction between a democratic and non democratic.
There are no elected positions.
The chaplain is the person who's basically running the organization. We have other organizations where we have student-led and have faculty advisors. And other chaplaincies where the chaplain basically determines them to be correctional. And so, in this case, Chi Alpha, their chaplain, they are the persons who basically determine what the policy is opposed to the students. Now, while there are students that are on their board, and Chris is one of the students, they appoint those students, in a case such as last semester, they ask Chris to
this, in a sense, encourage groups that would like to maybe include certain individuals to just simply become non-democratic groups? Which would, I mean, if I said, you know, I don't want people like X to be able to have leadership positions in my group, so I'll just make my group non-democratic, and then I'll be able to kick these people out whenever I want. Or not kick them out of a group, but kick them out of leadership positions. Is that a possibility?
It's a possibility, yes, but no one's. So, you know, yeah, I mean, there, this resolution pretty much says that members have rights. You know, that in democratic organizations, members should be able to run for these positions. But also, we need to take into account the flip side of the argument, which is if you do have a Christian organization that believes in democracy in terms of its leadership, and that organization could change its values in terms of who it likes. That organization would be forced if it were to want to elect its leaders to kind of change its position. So if the chaos thing were to happen in a matter where Chris was elected and then revelations came out of the second ballot, he wouldn't have protections in terms of remaining in the community.
But if a Christian organization wanted to, let's say they have elected positions and they decided, well, in order to get around, basically we have elected positions, but we want to be able to discriminate against certain people that we don't agree with, so we're going to become non-democratic. That is a possibility.
That's an option for all individual organizations.
Well, my response to
Dean Hubble, if you'd like to give your perspective on it. And please let her know that the FDA wishes her well as well.
VP Big.
I want to, if I could, in response to Kim's question, I think that the question, I guess, and I measure the answer just in terms of the organizational structure of the field and chaplain, that it could say that I don't think that, say, a chaplaincy that is when leadership comes from the, I think the way in which it happens, leadership where you have chaplains who are, you know, full-time persons or at least part-time persons who are in charge of the chaplaincy. I think each organization determines what the structure would be and how it provides opportunities to students and others of those organizations. In the case of Chi Alpha, they have the leadership structure that they have. Can, I guess the question is whether or not that can be challenged as such in order, as a student organization, in terms of how they determine policy, and that's maybe something that has to be vetted in terms of the chapter over a period of time. But I think a lot of it just has to do with the way in which organizations have been structured and how students and chaplains sort of work out, if you will, social contracts that determine how governance takes place, you know, or to what extent, you know, governance occurs, you know, whether it is, you know, they've created an opportunity for students to engage in leadership and determine what happens with an organization in terms of framework, whether it's a larger student-run organization.
All right, so I guess my question to comment was sort of surrounding the language in the new non-discrimination clause. So was the intent here, when you say actual or perceived, was that intended to apply to all the descriptors that you have here, or is that just actual or perceived age? Okay. So... Was this language drafted by you? I mean, is this language found friendly by judicial administrators, something that's tight enough to really apply? Because I'm just very concerned when we put actual or perceived, you know, height, weight, age, whatever, you know, anyone who doesn't get something can argue that their perceived whatever was not adequate.
I give that recognition to the whereas clause before the therefore resolved. It states that updating the non-discrimination clause governing independent organizations would allow for protection of more students and that is consistent with University Policy 6.4 prohibited forms of discrimination. I mirror the language in a university policy that already exists, so I would expect it to be at a legal council bill as a correct
vessel. The area that
what's the difference between creed and religious practice?
Creed has to do with belief, what an organization states as its body of belief. Practice has to do with how they embody it.
And so then what would be the difference between creed and religion? I'm just curious why, like, it just seems that we're just adding this enormous paragraph here, you know, things like height and weight. I mean, can the basketball team not select short people? Can the wrestling team, like, they accept everyone, you know, for club wrestling? And for
actually,
well, I know it's covered, I know it's, yeah, no, I know it says, but it says athletic club sports may restrict membership based on gender. It doesn't say that club sports can restrict membership based on other physical attributes that might be, you know, specific to that sport.
I mean, the policy, I didn't make up these words. I didn't come up with...
No, I know that you didn't make it up. I'm just sitting here questioning whether it's a good idea.
I would also say, too, that creed is not simply orientation, and that, and they have a certain creed or credo by which they live accordingly. So whatever one believes, you know, as the First Amendment protects freedom of belief, for freedom of activity, freedom of free association with minorities and business. So I think creed can be broadly construed, incorporating religion as in particular.
So would that cover the Republican who wants for the president, wants to run for the president of Cornell Dems? I mean, you know, like. So can I yield the rest of my time to you?
Go ahead.
I have one quick question. First, I just want to take issue really quick with earlier statement you made about the resolution that we passed about Chi Alpha being a malicious resolution. I don't think that's necessarily accurate. I think it was done with the best intentions. I think we were faced with a difficult situation, so I just wanted to clarify that on my end. My question was, how does this go in tandem with what the University Assembly did Wednesday, and you know, how do those two pieces fit together?
Well, as Mary Beth said at the beginning, when we chased after adding a non-discrimination clause to campus code for about 5 months, we were racked with problems. Like, if you make a vague clause, non-discrimination, and you're going to run into all sorts of legal difficulties. And when we were going at it, we were just thinking about independent organizations. And when you think about that on the campus code level, it becomes impossible because campus code wasn't meant to regulate independent student organizations. This document was. So, you know, we figured that we couldn't do what we really wanted to do, but we could still add some kind of non-discrimination language to the code, which didn't exist before, which exists in a lot of other campus codes for peer institutions. So the University Assembly is passing some kind of harassment discrimination clause, which would be great, which we need, but it won't be able to do everything we need, and it won't be able to attack the images that originally drove us to change the code.
Okay. We have a community member, Ray Munson.
My question comes back to the four say my organization is probably in order to run for several offices now, you have to be conservative. And you have to have come out and say about six, maybe 8 years. We don't have too many members. We have about maybe 15, 20 members. And what is to stop people who are not conservatives, who don't support our value system, from coming in, overwhelming our membership and voting in people of their own that go that goes against not only what the national organizations believes, but also what a key Republican principles and values.
Do you currently hold a license, right? So what's the stop them from doing that right now?
Well, you know, one, well, we have a board of directors, so there are barriers involved, and you know, there are issues where a person is accused to not be, to not have the same value systems that the national organization has, the state organization has, and that are in our constitution. We can stop them from running for office, but my big thing is that if this is passed, I feel that that right would be taken away from us, and that would hurt the group.
Okay. We'll move to Representative Desai, and then we're going to table the resolution to next week because we do have a lot on the agenda that we need to get through.
Okay. So I just have two-part questions. So the first part is, you know, in debating the distinction, you may use the word democratic, but in the actual resolution, you use the word elected. So I guess, like, to me, those are both kind of vague terms in the way they can be interpreted. So, you know, I guess the way that I saw it as elected versus appointed, you know, does the appointmentship have to come from, like, I guess, a higher national body or chapter? Or, you know, like, I know that there are clubs that, you know, e-board members are appointed by members of the e-board where it's not an open election. And then there are clubs that have processes where members of the club have a certain amount of votes and the e-board each have a vote, so that could be seen as both an election and an appointmentship. So I just wanted to clarify, like, what the term is that actually works. It's not really clarified in the resolution itself.
Right. In terms of how you're, it pretty much guarantees that members have a right to vote if that organization grants all members the right to vote, you know? So it wouldn't really infringe upon a constitutional process of a particular organization if they do it in a different way.
Okay, so like, you know, kind of referring to the issue that Representative Danzer brought up about like a club changing its process. So if a club changes its process to the way that, you know, a new e-board member is decided by the current e-board, each having one vote, you know, technically that member is elected. Does that count as an elected position or an appointed one? I mean, like, you know, for example, the way that vice presidents are selected for the student assembly is an internal election, but they're not really.
Pretty much what this is saying is that if you are granting the right to vote with your members, you cannot take away that right based upon any of those classes.
Okay, so I mean, if you guys are going to come back next week, I would ask for that to be clarified. And my next question is with the wording. So, you know, you guys specify elected positions as being, you know, who does have the right, but you don't specify non-elected positions as not having the right. And you do have to create, but it's not limited to. So, you know, I see it perfectly reasonable for someone to come in here and say that, well, the right to be free from discrimination with regard to membership includes, but is not limited to, the right to vote and run for elected positions. What's to say that the but is not limited to does not include appointed positions as well?
Well, but is not limited to was just put in place to say that members need to be given more than the right to be allowed to apply the 10th Amendment.
I understand that, so I'm saying, so what's to say that more than what you like specifically allocated does not include appointed positions? I mean, like, why couldn't someone make that case? Is that technically more than what you purchased? Like, I'm not taking a shot against you, I'm just saying, like,
I think we can, you know, take the next week to, you know, rework the language or whatnot.
If I come back in a week, then that's a clarification.
Great. Okay. So, yeah, I'll go ahead and table the resolution. I'd like to thank Dr. Clark and Mayor Beth for joining us today. Thank you very much. All right, now we're going to move ahead to Resolution 45, the SAFC's appeals process reform. Well, who wants to?
What?
Who wants to do this? Because they have to leave. So the sponsors are Charlie Feng, Dan Goose, and BP Biz.
I like the real fact.
Charlie Fang for
Jared. All right, so basically this resolution is a start sort of our role to look at the way that it appeals to the process and make it better. Because, you know, as you guys all know, the SAFC is kind of restricted based on their rules, what they're allowed to kind of count for the valid appeal.
All right, any questions? Yeah, Representative Bell, Welch.
So the FAA still have that power to overrule and appeal them,
I would read the resolution, the wording of it, be careful with that, how it outlines anything
that
might be given
there. Vivian.
Hey guys, so I know that we kind of talked about this idea of objectivity versus subjectivity in the guidelines, and I feel like this resolution comes back to the same issue that we had last semester, and it hasn't really changed. So, and Charlie, let me just get through this really quickly. And maybe Ari, I know that you're really involved in this process too, so I don't know if you want to sit up here. I mean, I'm just going to go through. I made a few notes from when I read this yesterday and this afternoon. I have a bunch of questions regarding, this entire procedure, such as, do we have a copy of the SAFC appeal form that's stated in this document? For example, so also in where under the procedure, the last paragraph of the procedure, under that heading there, what is the point of the appeal if we can't present new evidence and if we can't hear what the other, hear the side of the group if it's purely based on what currently is at the table? Let's move to receipt of review request and initial action, point three there. One of the questions was, what stops you from denying all the appeals? If the SAFC, and I'm not saying this would actually occur, but if the SAFC fundamentally agrees with the way the student assembly deals with its appeals, and the club has to go through the executive board of the SAFC, what stops the SAFC from denying every appeal, and the student assembly would never actually see an appeal? Appeal hearing. On the appeal hearing, why can't we see a reason or a manner in which the group can correct their mistake if it was literally just, we didn't, we had this piece of paper with the correct date on it, but we forgot to include it in that one budget packet. It's dated from before the application. It fell out of the packet as I was turning it in. It seems like it brings the entire application process to a new strict level that doesn't help, the image of the SAFC and the point of the SAFC. And there are plenty more. So I guess the fundamental question that I would like to ask is, would you be willing to table this resolution and next week or, work on this throughout the semester? We could bring it in front of the appropriations committee. We could create an ad hoc committee with SAFC members, with student assembly members, because at the end of the day, it still fundamentally comes down to a restricting of the appeals process from the point of the SA. And I think that we should have a say in it as our body, as an elected body, who has to deal with public opinion, especially since the SAFC has had a lot of flack for being too rigorous, and a lot of groups have, have issue with some of the way the SAFC is.
I actually agree. I don't even commit to look at the bottom of that left page under decision where we decide if we want to grant an appeal, we have to pay for it out of our budget.
Yeah, should we create two funding bodies? I think that's what needs to do.
I think that essentially what comes down to, we had the conversation we met a few days ago, and Charlie and I, that essentially the SAFC's job and the role that they do so well is being a perfectly objective body when it comes to hearing all these groups. As I said, they have these standards that follow them, prevents fraud, prevents one group from having a opinion over another. And it's a very good system for sort of ensuring,
This basically eliminates that unnecessary process. You also read the wording of the resolution. We cannot, technically the only reason we, the executive board, actually checks appeals is to grant any appeals that are very regular. I.e., you know, we made a direct error on some part of our organization, and we'll just grant them. Otherwise, we make no decision that we increase that. So, I mean, I think in terms of this resolution, the scope is a lot more limited than what Chris was saying before. I think that would be a
From what I'm hearing, would you guys rather table it to next week or table it indefinitely? Because it seems like there's more.
What right. information is this? The new business.
Right. Right. But I mean, well, they can choose to table it for until a longer period of time. Yeah, next week. Okay. That's fine, yeah, we can do that. All right, thank you. Okay, so we skipped a few announcements and reports to move to these resolutions, but now we'll return to them. I'd like to, at the student assembly, to welcome Jen, the GPSA liaison. And we have an elections update we'll go to by DOE Juno. Where's it?
Oh, here's that.
We're having an info session on Tuesday from 5 to 6 in the art gallery. So obviously, I would love to include you guys to come and kind of talk about how you feel that day and get everyone excited about it. And also, you guys know, we're doing this a little bit differently this year. I think you guys are probably aware of this. All the materials are now available online. We're actually not doing packets anymore. It's really big money in paper. And those are actually already up. So if you want to get started, you can definitely do that.
Great. Any questions?
Yes, quick question. Nikki, how, actually this may be to Alice too, how big is the elections committee right now?
I'm actually, it's fine.
Well,
yeah.
It's a relevant question.
Yeah.
Who is active? No, I'd say probably about 4 to 5
people. Yeah, we've lost one with Old's resignation, and then we just gained one with representative parties. So we're going to talk about that during executive session because we have some shuffling around with committee chairs as well as members. So we can talk about it. I have that on my agenda afterwards.
All right. Okay. Red Light Committee update, Representative Brown.
So the focus of the Red Light Committee for the next semester is going to be based on off-campus housing issues. And over break, I've been in communication with a kid named Camille, an engineer, and he's been working on a website that, in accordance with off-campus housing, maybe can make things a lot easier for students, get pictures of College Town residences on this website, on a database, and also, and most importantly, I think, allow students to rate their landlords, in fact, and pretty much to weed out the good ones from the bad ones, allow students to make a more informed choice who they're renting from as a person they're renting. So a few of us met with Camille on Monday, and we're going to meet with Dean Hubble tomorrow morning, and I guess I'll keep everybody updated after what goes on.
Any questions for us on Brown? Okay, moving on to an Appendix B update by BPD.
Hey everyone, so basically from my end, there's going to be two sort of financing things that we'll be doing this semester. Appendix A changes and Appendix B changes. We will have a SA exec meeting maybe next week or maybe later.
Maybe later.
Where we will essentially invite everyone who's interested in convincing Appendix A, which is the way we did violent funding. So, all of your thoughts and feedback about how the violent funding process went. Appendix B is all the rules for individual groups and how they're able to spend money. So it's, we've given Slope Day $18, now where can they spend it? For all the organizations we look at, we will judge, all these kinds of characteristics. And this will be sort of an all-semester thing, but I'd like to sort of get it started so we can have as much time as we need to flesh things out and not be, grasping for something the last week. So basically the Appropriations Committee is going to be meeting not this weekend, but next weekend, either the 13th or 14th. And we're going to go over sort of a first draft for Appendix D. And then, you know, we'll basically go reach out to groups and see what they think about the rules that we've put in. And then at some point, probably in the next month or so, we'll start bringing it to the Assembly for feedback. And this will be something that we'll probably debate on for several weeks, 3 weeks or so. Yeah.
Are Assembly members invited to the appropriation meeting?
Yeah. Yeah. I just sent a survey out to get when committee members can come. But whenever that time that works for everyone, I'll tell FA people. Yeah.
So on the Appendix A changes, it's going to kind of work how we do charter changes, where it's like every change is an individual resolution, or are you going to do like all of
them? No, this will be one thing together. For both, there'll be one Appendix B and one Appendix A resolution. So you people will make amendments, but it's going to be one resolution. You have questions?
No.
Sorry.
All right. Cool. SA website update by DP Andrews.
Yeah, is Haran here too?
No, he's not.
Oh, he's not here. All right, so Brandon found a, seems like, you know, some people to help out with the website. So this is separate from the blog. So hopefully we'll move to a new, flashier, more, you know, better looking professional website. The goal is within the next few weeks, it should happen, hopefully. And we're already looking into buying a domain name for it and all that stuff. So there's more to come. If you want to help out, like if you used to be the CIT chair and you know how to build websites and you want to help out with it, feel free. Or no, anyway, if you want to be part of this project, feel free to come up to me. And we'll try and include you if you have any cool ideas for how to build the website as a hub. Because I think the idea is if you just build a new website, what incentive do students have to go to it? But if you build a website that is both useful for students and so they can check their brochure more easily or something like that, as well as having essay information, students will be more inclined to actually visit the website.
Yep.
So that's the goal. If you have any suggestions, feel free to tell me. Thanks again.
Yeah, even if you feel like there's something that should be included in the website just in terms of ideas and not actually programming, that would be very helpful. We have an Ivy Council update by DP Lissa.
Okay, real briefly before Ivy Council, I know it says on here IOP update, but just to let you guys know, we're going to be moving into executive session after this just to go over some of the committee change-ups, so look forward to that. Should be pretty brief, though. Just to remind you guys all, Ivy Council is 3 weeks actually from tomorrow. So for those of you that are interested, I know some of you guys have applied. I've seen your names on there. Applications are due tomorrow at midnight, so try to get this in. They take about 2 minutes to do. And just let me know. We're looking forward to bringing about a delegation between 20 and 30 students.
Executive Committee meeting update by Vicky Kumar.
Yeah, so I just wanted to clarify that we'll be having a executive committee meeting on Tuesday. It's going to be every single Tuesday at 6 p.m. And I think we're going to do it upstairs near our office. And it's open to both SA members and the public. So anybody who's interested in stopping by our executive committee meeting, feel free to do so.
Does anyone have any questions? Any other announcements or reports that you want to... All right, so now we'll move on to unfinished business, Resolution 42, encouraging professors to comply with Cornell's third book list submission deadline. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right, so I'll give the sponsor of the resolution 2 minutes, and then we'll jump into debate, discussion, and then eventually a vote.
Yeah, so I got some feedback from the Cornell's sort of staffers, and they added one whereas clause, which is the fourth one, you know, why use textbooks and some that unneeded one yields to the great savings. You know, they want to stress the point that it actually is comparable to purchasing textbook rentals online or sharing books. And they also slightly changed the meaning therefore resolved clause, but nothing major.
Great. Open.
I'm with you.
Sorry, I guess.
Tomorrow, and hopefully we're going to start moving forward in the spirit of that discipline. And basically, we're working with Lynn up here, doing this sort of PR campaign and really trying to reach out to faculty members. So I
not representatives on any presented lawsuit. Maybe I forgot to include it there.
If I could also add, I think the University Assembly has some legislative oversight over some policies and operations at the Cornell store. So if you want to work with Idris and Adam Nicoletti as they report to the SA, or the UA, that would be good. Any other, anybody else for the speakers list? All right.
Motion to vote.
Yeah, motion to vote. Is there a second? Second. All right. So could you take the vote, please? There's a motion for a hand vote. Is there a second?
Yeah, second.
All right. All those in favor? Liaisons don't vote.
Yeah.
So 17. All those against? Abstentions? All right, this resolution passes 17-0.
Now we'll move on to resolution 43 by Representative Smith, defining the general roles of college representatives. Mm. And this is a charter amendment, so it'll be voted on next week, so now it'll just be question and answers. Go ahead.
Thank you.
what?
And this is probably one of the biggest things that we are able to do just because the man was the
Represent Benzo.
So I completely applaud that. It's a great idea. The one thing that the problem for me is the enforcement. I'm not sure how well known this is, but actually in our standing rules that we passed, I wasn't seated yet, but that the SA passed at the beginning of this last semester, it actually requires every student assembly member to hold, like sort of like a town hall meeting with their constituency or with the quorum community at large. I'm pretty sure that's been in there. I'm not sure how much change there is in the standing rules of the assembly.
We added that in my freshman and sophomore year.
What?
We added that in my freshman and sophomore year.
So that was added years ago, and I can't recall ever seeing anyone doing it, not mentioning everyone doing it. So I think that if we want to consider something like this, there should be some amount of enforcement ability.
I absolutely agree. And the point of that is, yes, it is in the standing rules. I don't want to underestimate the difficulty, but I think, you know, when you guys look at the charter, I think a lot of people will pay much more attention to it. A lot of people probably have done great education.
What do you imply?
I think it is a lot right now based on instruction, which probably might be better. However, I don't think we should actually undercut the entire process based on enforcement. I think a lot of that is relevant to who is in office because a lot of people work in a lot of different manners. Some people might prefer more paperwork than other people prefer. So I think that is something that should be talked to the executive committee, particularly the vice president of operations.
DC Business.
Yeah, I guess to sort of answer Danzer's question, up until this year it was followed pretty well. Last year, Tony sent form letters to everybody to schedule a meeting with your college dean. For the most part, people were very good about meeting with their college dean. I guess this year's been a little different, but I think that basically educating assembly members about their responsibilities and their obligations as assembly members is just as much a challenge, whether it's written in the standing rules of the charter. So I don't see any reason, because literally this exact same language is already in the standing rules, why it has to be in the charter rather than where it is now. I think it comes to like a question of leadership and of all of us sort of, you know, saying we're going to follow up with people and like actually make this happen as college chairs. So the question of enforcement, there was enforcement, and for those of you who are older members, and I guess Ari's not in the room anymore, maybe Asa, maybe that was sophomore year, remember all the fun over the punishments about reading the SASC guidelines before. Was that your freshman year? Yeah. So punishments really have never fared well in SA legislation. Basically, there were guidelines that said that if you didn't take the president and treasurer's test before SASC appeals, you wouldn't be allowed to vote. A lot of people thought that was an infringement on assembly members' rights to vote. I guess that sort of begs the question, you know, what are you going to do? Are you going to unseat someone? Are you going to, you know, slap them on the wrist, make them stand on one leg during the meeting in the middle of the room, like I that would actually be great, and I would vote for that. But in all seriousness, I'm kind of wondering. I think the spirit of this, and especially adding these clauses about outreach, like surveys and getting feedback, is something that I would absolutely want to see. But I think that we should go ahead and amend the standing rules for this year to add that in there, and then have a continuation of those standing rules in the future. So that's kind of what I would want to see for changes for next week.
Observe delusion. Is that speaking? BP Andrews.
Hey, listeners. Enforcement, I don't think that's as big of an issue, especially for this. They're pretty common sense things, and I think it's good to have it in the charter. I have two small issues. So the first thing is I would like to. I just have a question. I guess we're not voting on this today. We're voting on next week. My question would be, why on the first part there, college representative, why do you have and voting according to the need? I think you could lead to conflict. Could you change? Would there be a problem with changing from voting to representing? Because I think our as representatives, we're not, our only function isn't to vote, but it's also to follow through. It's also to do much more beyond voting. So, and then, voting is very specific. So representing, I think, embodies more the entire, would you object to that? And then finally, the last kind of question I had, how would you feel to, on the next part, the 4.3.A responsibilities, section 2 or part 2 there on the back side. I know on part 4 you have an approval process for the climate survey, but on part 2 with all the mailings and all that stuff, I don't know if we need a formal approval process from the executive committee, but perhaps like a notification or just a function of making sure that the entire assembly knows these things are going out, so that if, for example, you get an email from the Sun, or if you get an email from a constituency saying, why did I receive this, or what is all this about, everybody on the assembly knows that you sent an email out or something.
Right. I agree with you. I believe that it is written in the charter and also written in the letter. I think that we
So I guess, maybe if you can specify in one place, you specify the other, or don't specify at all, just for consistency. All right. Thank you, Jesse.
Representative Brass. Representative Desai.
This is a question for Alex or anyone who might know regarding the Dean's meeting. Are those only available to college representatives, or if you're not a college representative, can you still attend your college Dean's meeting? Is there any protocol on that?
There's nothing that says you can't bring another student.
We were encouraged to bring everyone in the college last year.
Everyone?
Yeah.
The entire college. Okay, so anybody that would want to attend, that's absolutely fine. But I don't think there's anything that says you can't do that. I think that's a great idea, actually. If there are students that, want to meet and they have a difficulty getting, time with the dean and you have a time spot, yeah, sure, bring them along. That's absolutely fine. Yeah, I know, at least in Cal's, we have the Dean Advisory Council, and we meet with the dean at least 3 times a semester. And that way, we've got 20 students that come in on that, and Adam Nicoletti and I both sit on that council, so it works out pretty well.
All right, thank you.
Yep. Okay, thank you, Ulysses, and please, keep in touch with people who made recommendations so you can make it stronger for next week. Okay, moving on to Resolution 46, making the synthesis option. I need to go ahead.
So I'll give Randy 5 minutes to explain, and then we'll open up for questions. We won't vote on this week.
this is something I've actually had in mind for a while. I'm just starting to run down the list sort of like the rationale of the whereas clause, which is following the certain clause so the first one, making explaining the origin behind this basically, I guess, you know, it was socially accepted that, you know, swimming was necessary to be a proper young lady. And, you know, obviously, you know, in today's day and age, no one can tell you, you know, what it means to be proper or put any definition on these abstract terms. Also, so initially this was made for women. It was expanded to men during, I guess, sometime around the 40s during World War II, because a large number of Cornell male students went into the draft. And I guess, you know, definitely a plus to have the people going into the military be able to swim. Now, you know, we never had, you know, conscription since Vietnam War, and that's, you know, 37 years ago, so it's quite some time. Nor do we see ever anticipate, hopefully, that happening again. So, you know, that's the reason for men now is to go out of the question, so the swim test requirement doesn't relate to the core academic mission of the university. If you look up Cornell University's core academic mission, it says something along the lines of making sure students are creative and have a broad base of knowledge and such. And I've been speaking to the director of aquatics, who's saying, you know, our core mission is only academic, but based on, you know, the university's academic mission did on the website, it seems to be mostly, you know, knowledge-based kind of research. I'm going to remove the whereas clause for the internship test does not adequately prove that students can swim, because we're going to have to talk with the director who said that, yes, it does prove deviant, but I read this one also, right? You know, people can pass just by dog paddling and not necessarily performing any type of swimming motion, I guess, you know. But, you know, it does prove that they can, you know, stay afloat long enough to get some safety from emergency situations. So I'm going to go ahead and do that. And, okay, so the next part, you know, is true. He said it's correct. You know, they have to, I guess, go through a traumatic event of experiencing the phobia of water or whatnot, which, you know, I don't think is necessary. You know, all of us have fears. You know, people might be arachnophobic, they're not made to kind of spiders, you know, over their fears. There are a number of things. I don't know why they should be isolated. And the one with minor disabilities was also, you know, affirmed by the director of aquatics, but he said that students can appeal taking the swim test if they feel that their disability hinders them in any way from taking the swim. But I think even just the act of doing that, students might not be so open to, you know, revealing that as something that might, you know, isolate them, kind of some sort of physical or medical thing. And so the next few whereas clauses, right? So address safety, right? For those who argue that, you know, it's a really good safety measure to have to deal with swimming in you know, emergency situations, but you're both safe or something. So the odd design from drafting I have there, and that's taken from the National Safety Council table, and it says 1 in 10,000 might be reported, right? But, you know, 25% of that is accounted by children 4 years and younger. Obviously, you know, we're all around the 18 to 24-year-old range. So I think that, you know, 1 in 10,900 is significantly lower if you remove everyone, you know, 4 years and younger. I mean, it's significantly higher.
1 minute.
Saving
a life every year.
That should also be taken into account. And if we really are concerned about safety for students, right, there are much more imminent dangers, more likely dangers to occur to students than drowning. And I've included here, you know, intentional self-harm. So your odds of dying from that are 1 in 150. Yet you don't, you know, mandate students to take some sort of counseling service or anything like that. Assault, 1 in 200. You don't require students to take any self-defense courses. And finally, happening, you know, car accidents, everyone goes to motor vehicle accidents, results in a huge number of deaths, yet, you know, they don't require any driving safety. Even though most students at San Cornell would be, you know, eligible to receive a driving license. So, I also want to make it clear that I'm not in favor of completely eliminating the swim test. I just want to make it optional, because I do feel like it's important, but like I said before, if we are to require students to do something, then we should concentrate on something that would be more likely.
Thank you. So we'll start on the speakers list. First is Director of Elections, Drunowitz.
Okay, this question kind of turns off a little bit of a story. So, I guess when I found out about the test when I was in Cornell, I was terrified. I wasn't a great swimmer. I was convinced it would be the first test I would fail here at Cornell. So, consequently, before my freshman year, I trained at our local center. I was so afraid of myself. In doing so, I actually became a pretty strong swimmer in all the practice. But when I got to Cornell, you know, I did it and I was so happy and all that stuff. But here's the thing. So one thing I wanted to ask you about this resolution was, when you spoke with the director of aquatics, is there any particular reason why they promote this so much to freshmen? Or like, do you even have to do your orientation week? And now the senior, in retrospect, I know teachers are still not taking it. And I'm kind of wondering if how is it, you know, being a student, you don't know anyone, is it awkward? Is there any way that they can maybe do something where they don't, I guess, push it so much on the students? So I feel like that's kind of like,
I think the logic for doing it, you know, before you get your classes begin is that since it is such an important requirement to graduate from the university, it's best to just get it out of the way early so you don't, you know, forget and realize that. Oh, go ahead. Yeah.
Great. So next on the speaker's list is Representative Rapp. We'll put you on the speaker's list.
My personal opinion is on the matter of time. Is this on?
No, yell.
So, I mean, we've passed a lot of resolutions this year, and certainly some of them have been, I guess, kind of, say, radical, and I think this would be one of the more radical ones. And, you know, I think a surprising number of resolutions that we have not really been put into effect by the administration, and I was just wondering what the feasibility of this piece of paper, you know, going to Susan Murphy and the Board of Trustees and David Gordon and them actually, you know, looking at the legitimacy.
That is a great question. I was thinking exactly the same thing. All the people against the citizen sense of body express, you know, the opinion of the students. And I think if nothing else, maybe it'll get people in the administration, you know, thinking about this topic. Because I think this is one of the issues that everyone criticizes or, you know, might be talking about behind the scenes, but no one ever questions it publicly. And I think, you know, this would be a good attempt to do that, and maybe, I heard that, I'm not sure if it's the faculty senate or some body every few years votes again on whether to institute the swim test. Every time it has come up for a vote, it's been perpetually passed. So, hopefully, you know, this might, you know, change people's opinions.
Can I add a little bit?
So,
wouldn't it be better off then to go and actually talk to people then who make this rather than passing a resolution? Go and talk to people who make the decision about the swim test. If students feel so strongly about this, shouldn't we, as an assembly, then go and meet with the state before the
doing
it?
Yeah,
and then I yield my time.
But I disagree.
Yeah. 1 minute. Oh, I'm sorry. 1 minute.
Or you vote.
All right. If we pass this resolution, would you be in favor of proposing a new resolution that would require all Cornell students to wear life vests as they walk on campus? Just as a safety precaution.
I wouldn't
be. Okay, I was just kidding.
Great. Question. Next on the speakers list is Representative DeLucia.
Yeah. That's a joke.
Just one quick question. Grammy, did you pass the swim test?
Yeah.
I was wondering if you had like 5
minutes. Was it
the graduate?
Next is VP Baker.
Yeah. I mean, I think this resolution is ridiculous, especially in light of
all the things that we should be dealing with in the assembly that really, really matter right now. Moreover, making the swim test optional is ridiculous because it's not going to do anything. That will essentially mean that nobody would take it. Like, why would I spend my time to walk across campus when I could not walk across campus? Just to like swim up and down, especially if I know how to do it. So I'm gonna table this indefinitely.
All right, there's a motion to table it indefinitely. Is there a second? All right, seeing no second. All right, there's no second to that motion. I'm gonna go ahead and table it. It's passed. What?
Okay, sorry.
Yeah, so I'm gonna table it till next week so we can get through the other resolution that Representative Gitlin has.
I was just joking with you. Sorry about that.
Sorry, I meant to say I'm going to motion.
I'm tabling the
rest. Don't make the motion. No, we're going to table it. 6:30. I want to add.
Go ahead. introduce yourself.
My name is Adam.
Well, you don't have
to. Oh, my God.
If you're going to read it, you don't have to. We can just read it for ourselves.
Okay, that's fine. Basically how I see this committee functioning is to really, I guess, expand the mission of the student assembly at some level. So it's not only, so we as an elected body are not only representing the students, but we're also going out and inspiring. We are all very involved in different circles, and I think everyone here really has the potential to show the student body and our friends and our colleagues and students, that they can get involved on campus and in the city.
Okay. Representative Rack.
I'd like to take both of you guys to come meet. I know a lot of people after the disaster, they basically come to the student assembly asking people what they can do and how they can help. A couple of representatives have decided to take it on their own initiative, but I think something that would really fit in with this public service community, not only helping the public service throughout the Ithaca area, would be to help organize and help like fundraise and aid whatever needs to be for future or current disaster relief. So if you guys would find it friendly to add into the bylaw something to that extent so people can know that they can come to the assembly and come to the community and they will be focused on working with students to be basically spearheading the campaign to help everyone. I think that would be a great way for you guys to expand the community. So I don't know if you guys like that.
Yeah, I completely agree. The student assembly really took charge. Organizing or helping facilitate the effort with relief on campus for the Haiti earthquake. The assembly sent out an email last week regarding all the upcoming events to raise money and awareness for the Haitian community on campus and Haiti. So I think that's an excellent idea. We definitely work on making sure you do that.
Cool. Representative Desai. Yeah, it's started.
Yeah. I agree with Representative Brown. I think it's a great idea, especially as a freshman coming to Cornell or someone who's been serving, so it's really hard to get involved right away. Like, I know a lot of freshmen don't know about ways to get involved with service, they don't even know like what the public service center is. I guess my two questions would be, number one, Adam, are you going to chair this committee, or are you designated someone else to? And the second question is, have you guys already
The first answer is I have no idea. It's hard to speculate, before I'm not even focusing on that. Like, I'm just more focusing on introducing it going. Just an idea. Regarding the second question, we have not yet, reached out to all the service organizations.
Yeah, I mean, my biggest concern about this resolution, and we've talked a little bit about this, Adam, is the fact that, as Raneel just said, I didn't know about the Public Service Center as a freshman. How is a freshman any more likely to know about the Student Assembly Public Service Committee, coming in? I think that really all that we're doing is adding another level of bureaucracy. So, we have this public service committee, and this is supposed to be linking students and organizations to the Public Service Center, which has money and resources and everything together. Why not just have the Public Service Center re-engage with the student body and really draw people in? I mean, why, right now we have a dearth of student assembly members who can fill committee chair positions, and it's difficult for us to keep everything staffed. So why add another committee chair position that's just going to be unstaffed and underutilized? And, I think that, what really would make the Public Service Committee excellent would be great leadership, but, I'm again sort of hesitant to sort of put that responsibility on the Assembly rather than leaving it on the Public Service Center to be sort of excellent in the job that they do.
On the one hand, I definitely understand where you're coming from regarding the lack of, potential representatives and chairmen of positions. Again, for me right now, it wasn't as much of a priority on my mind. It was more, getting the Student Assembly to take on something, and I guess the detail, that sort of detail was dealt with later. I think that the Student Assembly has a really unique role on our campus, that we're really involved in a lot of different circles, a lot of different organizations, Grief Life and fraternities that are devoted to professional skills. And I think the Student Assembly is the only body that has the ability to really get around campus. And I think the Public Service Center can really use a group of students who touch every part of campus. And I think that everyone here does.
Okay. Yeah. So we're going to go to VP Kumar, Representatives Brockman, Purdy, and Junowitz, and then we're going to table it to next week.
Just first of all, thanks for sticking around for such a long time. I just wanted to find out, can you really like simply lay out what this committee would do that the public service, like, are there any areas that you know don't overlap between the public service center and what this committee could do?
Representative Brockman.
All right. Well, I like the idea, and I'm not averse to it at all. I just have a couple of suggestions. The first is that if you're passionate about this, if this is something you want to get involved in, then say you're going to be chairman. Say you're going to run it. Say that you have ideas.
Important information. Our committee chairman selected in an internal election process. That's, thank you.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point. Thanks.
Sure.
Well, say you want to be chairman. And also, maybe you want to start it in an ad hoc status and give us updates as it progresses. And if by the end of the year we see that, you know, this committee is actually active, that this committee is actually staffed, because that's a huge problem with a lot of our committees, then, you know, people would be more inclined to change the charter if we see that this committee is actually working. So you should try ad hoc and...
Did you do that with the
I did. The Committee on Transfer Affairs didn't start out as changing the charter. It started out as ad hoc. And as it got more active, by the end of the very last meeting of the year, I switched it to make it a permanent committee.
Thank you for the...
What's that, please? Talking
about
that... A dear agent.
My only concern with this resolution is the stance that I wish you could be a little more specific about exactly how you're going to talk with people, maybe talk with people, and what you need, what you do. And I guess maybe think of, I don't know, I guess a few issues you want to attack and focus on. So the only, other than that, though, I mean, I would be totally for it. So I guess if you kind of talk to people, you know, what do they think about this?
No, I mean, we definitely have a lot of ideas for our committee. I just didn't know if that was appropriate to be concerned with the language of the charter. But for the next version of it, if you like me to put it in, you know, the meeting, therefore, dollars, some more thoughts, that outlines a little more than a few more than that.
I guess it seems to be the issue that, you know, people, you know, people fresh to this is just another ethics committee that's in a lot of our communities, like, let's be honest, sometimes they go and ask that for 3 years, you know, but I think if that's all concerned, it'll be, you know, too much kind of. So I guess if you, even if you don't completely understand the language of the resolution, but if you want to really think about, like, for example, say, you know, 10 want to say about the meeting and then, you know, students at large or whatever. Let's say you, I guess, approach different members. I'm not telling you to tell any members. You know, if you want to approach different members who actually want to be on it, things like that.
In order when you register a club with a student, you know, you can check off as many spots like tags as you like. And one of the tags is service or advocacy. The problem is, you know, you are registering necessarily think deeply about whether their organization is devoted to that. And I think as a student assembly, which has, you know, a lot of input with organizations and student activities on campus, you would be able to determine and consolidate a list that's actually approachable as opposed to 350 not necessarily related to service organizations currently on the student website.
Yep. Okay. Yeah, so we'll table it to next week and meeting adjourned. We're going to go into executive session.
You guys will be really brief.
Yeah, all the SA members can
just get the media out of here.
Let's go.
Did I get that early? Oh, yeah.
Hey, hey.
This has been a production of Cornell University, on the web at cornell.edu.